Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
And a very good evening, Ben, and hi everyone as usual.
Hi everyone indeed. As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text number is 087-179-1032. Standard text rates apply, that's 087-179-1032. Lots to get through as usual, including, of course, we'll give you an update very shortly now on the progress of the Artemis mission. Yes, it's going very well so far. We'll talk to you about that in a moment. But first, we'll start with what to see in the night sky.
And you will be delighted to hear that the ISS is back in our evening skies again. It came in on the 18th, we're the 22nd today, so it's 4 days in. We've just missed a pass.
I think it was 7:15, just less than an hour ago, if you saw a bright light travelling west to east in the clear skies that we have. No flashing lights. That was it. And it would have faded as it got about 3/4 of the way across the sky.
Mm-hmm. So it's... delighted to hear that's back in our evening skies again until December the 7th.
I have the time for tomorrow.
Yeah.
It is 6:27 p.m. tomorrow evening. It will be at an altitude of 44 degrees here from our vantage point here in Dublin, but it's only going to be 1 or 2 degrees off that, no matter where you are in the country, from the south of the country to the north of the country. It'll only be plus or minus 2 degrees at most, and the magnitude minus 3.2. So that starts, you should see it from about 6:27 p.m. or thereabouts, when it's at least 10 degrees above the horizon, and it will start to fade about 3 minutes later, just as it's passing above Jupiter. So that's a good pointer for Jupiter. Not that you can miss Jupiter at the moment. It is extremely bright in the round about the south, as the sky is getting dark.
Yeah, it's in the southeast as the sky is getting dark. It's quite high at that stage. And then Mars will follow it shortly. I'll tell you more about that later.
More on Mars, you can't. It's hard to miss Mars, rising a few minutes earlier every evening and coming in towards opposition on the 8th, isn't it? When it'll be at its nearest and brightest, but can't miss it at the moment. Two very bright objects in the sky at the moment, two very bright planets, Jupiter and Mars.
Now, hands up, how many saw any of the Leonids? I didn't.
No.
I did. It was sort of been a bit murky over the last few days, so the peak of it was on last Thursday, the 17th. Now, you possibly will get an odd one or two just flaking through, as it's quite a large path of that one as well. But we will start with Mercury and Venus. And unfortunately, they're hidden in the glare of the sun just at the moment. And you're not going to get a chance to see them. Mars, we spoke about just a few moments ago, brightening from magnitude minus 1.6, which is quite bright. Anything in the minuses is the thing to look for. And it'll climb to minus 1.7 this particular week. And I was out this morning at 4:30 as I was raiding the fridge as usual. And I just saw it was in the spot where Jupiter would be a few hours earlier. And it's a fine sight. Absolutely crystal clear this morning. So that was good to look at. So it's well worth a look. So Jupiter is the other one. Blazes white high in the southeast. So the difference between the two, Mars one is a reddy orangey tinty one. And Jupiter blazes. It's very bright. Minus 2.8. And it's highest in the south as early as 8 p.m. And that's quite high at that stage, so it's a brilliant thing to look for. In fact, I was looking at it just on the way into the studio this evening, and it's there. Nobody ever looks up, though. I was watching everybody passing by, and nobody ever looks up. Mm-hmm. I was just chatting away and doing their stuff. Saturn, on the other hand, magnitude plus 0.7. It's a bit dimmer, and it lows highest in the south as a twilight fades, and as the night progresses, it moves lower towards the southwest, and it sets at 10, half 10-ish, that sort of area, depending on and what sort of horizon view that you have. Uranus at plus 5.6 in Aries at the moment. It's just past opposition. It's up in the east. In good binoculars, you might get a chance to see that by mid-evening. And Neptune at a little bit dimmer than Uranus at 7.9 on our space Richter scale, that's what we call it. And it's high in the evening, 6 degrees west of Jupiter. So you will get to see it. And that's a good landmark to find as well. So 6 degrees west of Jupiter, you'll get a chance to see Neptune. And always worth a little look. You're not going to see an awful lot by doing that, just a smudge. But at least you can say he'll be of the, is it the 1% that have seen these particular planets, Uranus and Neptune?
Round about. Mercury, I've heard, is about 1% of people have seen it.
Yeah.
Or noticed it, or actually knew that they were looking at it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because I have seen it with the naked eye. But you wouldn't know it was a planet unless you had your little, either your star chart, or you knew from one of the astronomy magazines where to find it. Or one of your apps on your phone. Indeed.
Yeah, apps everywhere. Yeah, brilliant. And I'm sure you can just Google in and get the apps that you're looking for. They're all out there available.
I was going to give you the moon times.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Anyway, yes, there's plenty of apps for sure, how to find the planets and constellations. And it gives you, a lot of them give you information on particular stars and constellations and the planets. But speaking of the moon, well, we're coming up to new moon. New moon will be tomorrow, just before 11 p.m. tomorrow evening. So we have a very, very thin waning crescent at the moment. It's about 2%, but the chances of seeing the 2% one as we're coming up to new moon. So because we're coming up to new moon, the moon set just before the sun this evening. So it's not up now, but it will rise in the tomorrow. Yes, it's going to rise at 7:27 a.m., by which stage it'll be down to about 0.6%. Now, that's only about just over half an hour before sunrise, so the chance of seeing the moon about a couple of degrees ahead of the sun and 0.6%. are fairly slim. I don't know whether anyone has ever spotted that. It's a very dodgy one to try and go for, especially with the sun coming up. You don't want to be blinded. But it will rise at 7:27 a.m. tomorrow morning, and it's very thin. Only 0.6% of the face of the moon you will see. It'll be due south at 11:44 a.m., just before midday tomorrow. At that stage, it'll be down to 0.3%. It's impossible. Impossible to see, really. And then it will set about 10:04 tomorrow evening. That says you'll be down to 0.1%. Yeah, you haven't really a hope. And as I said, the new moon will be later tomorrow evening, just before 11 a.m. But the sun will rise in Dublin tomorrow at 8:04, which is a whole 13 minutes later than a week ago. Local noon, when the sun will cross the meridian, or at its highest in the zenith, it's at 11 minutes past 12 on the clock, and then it will set at 18 minutes past 4 tomorrow evening, which is 9 minutes earlier than a week ago. And from then until just before 5 p.m. we have civil twilight, and from then until 20 to 6 we have a nautical twilight, and then from then until 6:23 p.m. we'll have astronomical twilight, and then after that, of course, we have astronomical night. So what that means is tomorrow there will be 2 minutes and 53 seconds less daylight than today, when we'll have a total of 8 hours and 14 minutes between sunrise and sunset, and that's a whole 22 minutes less daylight than a week ago.
It is noticeable.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, yeah. Closing in at 3 minutes a day. Yes. That's noticeable indeed.
Just before we leave the area of the planets, if you're interested in seeing the giant red spot. Now, it's one of those lucky planets that we can see that rotates every 9.5 hours thereabouts. Tomorrow morning, the 23rd, 2:47 a.m., and again at 10:39 p.m., you'll get a chance to see the great red spot. And there or thereabouts, you get to see it once or twice a day, which is good fun as well.
Yes, yeah, the planet, of course, rotates very rapidly, but just under 10 hours, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, nine hours, 37 minutes or something like
that. I know
that.
They have it timed down to a fraction of a second.
They do, yeah.
Milliseconds.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And just on Jupiter, on Thursday, it was be stationary and the prograde motion resumes on Thursday. John. Now, the big news, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Since we last spoke to you a whole week ago, was it last Wednesday morning, at 10 minutes to 7, or there or thereabouts, Artemis 1 eventually took off from Cape Canaveral in Florida. I was watching it on my, just not long after the whole alarm went off, before I trotted out to the day job, and went to check the phone, went on to NASA TV, and got just in time to see it blast off, and it took off like a rocket. It was a rocket. But normally I was surprised at the speed at which it took off. Now, it is a very powerful rocket. But when you see the old pictures of the Saturn V taking off, or the space shuttle, it seemed to me to take an age to clear the tower, because, of course, they're so massive and you need a lot of energy to lift something that heavy.
They reach 100 miles an hour before they're at the top of the tower. Now, this one might have been slightly quicker, but seemingly the Apollo ones, or any of the Challengers, any of the shuttles themselves, would reach 100 miles an hour before they reach the top of the tower.
I thought they got about 20 miles an hour before they got to the top.
It's very, very, it's just from the initial liftoff to the time that they are going, like the clappers. So it's really quick. So there you go.
So that was the first launch of that whole system of the SLS and the boosters. And see, the main tank now is the biggest one. It's, the Apollo was in three sections, three stages. But this one has one main section, and the two boosters, which were ejected after all the fuel was spent. There's about 2 minutes or so. And then the main engine fired, and that was for another few minutes. I don't have the times exactly, but it all went very well. And it completed its first flyby of the moon, if I'm not mistaken. Was that yesterday or the day before?
Yes. Yeah, good to see Alan is with us. As he mentions there, as Ben's favorite word for the evening is getting darker, a minor contraction in the evenings. Yeah,
as opposed to
grand ones. Yeah, yeah, that's a Ben word. A minor contraction. Anyway, it sent us back some beautiful photographs of the moon.
Planet Earth.
Yeah, of planet Earth as well. Did you not see that one? It was not unlike the one the Apollo 8 took, just as it came round the corner, as you wish, pointing back towards Earth. And this one was the other way round, actually, so it was down, unless the way the cameras were looking at it. So the Earth was down to the lower left, about the 7 p.m. mark, or the 7 o'clock mark, and it gave us a view of the moon's surface as well. So, but there are some fantastic photographs around available on the internet.
There sure are. So it went past. Went within 130 80, kilometers.
That's
a fabulous photograph.
Yeah, 80 miles or thereabouts. So
are we broadcasting in colour?
No. Yep. So I have the photograph here of the moon's surface and the Earth in the background.
No, I didn't see that picture before. That's pretty impressive, for sure.
Yes. Slightly
and
different
they went
angle.
Very, very close, 120, 150 kilometres, within 130 kilometres from the lunar surface, and then shot way past it. And the Orion module will officially enter lunar orbit on its 10th day of flight, which is 25th of November, only 3 days away, when the European Service Module performs what they call the distant retrograde insertion, firing its thrusters to break Orion and keep flying around the moon, and eventually the Orion module will come back and land in the Pacific Ocean on the 11th of December, but it's all going very well. All goes very well for the next, the second flight of Artemis, which will actually have people on board. And they will be going beyond the moon, beyond further than, I don't know who was furthest from Earth. I think it was Apollo 13. I'm not sure. I'm sure Encyclopedia Atlantica knows that one.
Yeah, we've just asked the question, actually. We'll get an answer in a moment. Just one weird thing that I read about this as well. The Artemis 1 spacecraft flies by the moon with some lunar soil aboard from the Apollo 11 mission. Now, seemingly, there are four little samples, and they've described them as goodwill samples. They were little individual, greater than 2 millimeters fragments separated out of the bigger soil collection. Collected, of course, by Apollo 11, as they were gifted to every country and every state. And the reason they did this is they made more than they handed out, and they made 4 or 5 left over from this, and this is one of the leftovers. So probably just to touch wood, a little bit of luck involved in that, just to make sure that everything was going well for the little trip to the moon. But it's fantastic news, and a real step forward as well. Although we have sent unmanned spacecraft to Mars, and with the 7, what do they call it, the 7 minutes of hell when they lose the transmission, so we don't have that. So this is the first step in getting man back to the moon, and it looks like in around 2025 they do that. They send another Artemis mission up again, and then they will, if everything goes right, of course, they'll send men, because there are mannequins up there on that spacecraft as well, with thousands of sensors as they're strapped to the seats. So I hope they're not misbehaving at all soon.
I think they flew above the Apollo 11 landing site, and also above the Apollo 14, about 1,400 miles above the Apollo 11 landing site. And then later on yesterday, I believe it was, they flew above the Apollo 14 landing site, about 6,000 miles above it. And then over the Apollo 12 site. So
Yeah, like for those of you who don't believe.
Checking them all out.
Yep, there you go. So we'll watch with interest now to get some of the photographs as they're released back to us in the coming weeks.
Yeah, that record was as to what people travelled furthest from Earth was actually Apollo 14. When they set the record for the farthest distance travelled by a spacecraft designed for humans at 248,655 miles from Earth, and that was on Saturday, November 26th, and it reached its maximum distance from Earth of 268,552 miles on Monday, November 28th. So that's they're the furthest up to now. People have been furthest from the Earth, Apollo 14, and you're going to tell us now. Who's on Apollo 14?
I'm not going to put my foot in that
remember
one.
That one.
We could look it up.
I don't.
Yep. There we go. So that's it, Artemis. It's great to see. Now, talking about mannequins and things, and I don't know whether you remember, of course you remember when Tesla launched the Spaceman, or the Starman as they call him, and this was Elon Musk's Tesla Roadster in space. And I have an email in there. It's Edgar Mitchell and Alan Shepard. I mean, there you go. That's Alan. Thanks for that. And Stu Rusa.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, brilliant. Great to have the encyclopedia around it when you're looking for the most. But anyway, back to the Starman. Where is the Starman just at the moment? Now, he's been floating around between Earth's orbit, Mars's orbit, Mercury, Venus, and that. But where it is right now, its current location is 197,274,855 miles away from the Earth. It is 240,959,216 miles from Mars. And it is 110,295,052 miles away from the Sun. And at this stage, the car has exceeded its 36,000-mile warranty. So it's not going to, if something happens now at this stage.
So to bring it back for an NCT.
Yeah, there we go. And it's just going around the sun just as we speak. And the orbital period is about 557 days to get around the sun. So a little bit more, because it does sort of fly by as past Earth here and gets a little pull from here and there and everywhere. So what it looks like now in space, who knows? The paint might have corroded a little bit if the, with the bit facing the sun. We just don't know. But we'll read that. I have something on it, but it doesn't tell us much enough about it. And it's still unclear if the car's battery pack is still fixed to the vehicle. Yep, they won't be able to go very fast with that, without that fella.
Thank you, John. You're listening to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text number is 087-179-1032. Standard text rates apply. That's 087-179-1032. And, of course, we're also available as a live stream on dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast. Now, we mentioned the International Space Station earlier, John, and I see that NASA and Japan have announced that they're good to go. They're happy to keep the space station going until the year 2030, at least. And so it looks safe until then. And they also have agreed to join forces with regard to the Gateway space station. The Gateway space station is the planned space station that will orbit the moon, as opposed to the International Space Station we have at the moment, which is in low Earth orbit. And that, excuse me, that Gateway space station will also be a staging post or a landing post or what would you call it? Drop-off pub?
Drop-off point.
Pub, I nearly said. As you're going to the moon, for those going to the moon, onto the surface of the moon, and perhaps even a little stop off on the way to Mars, maybe, if it's in the right position at the time. But what I don't understand, well, I can understand where you might have a system where you would get shuttles, say we'd have a big rocket, you go on a big rocket of some description to Gateway, and then you would have little shuttles back and forth from the lunar surface. But I know they're also planning on doing a lot of scientific experiments, which they do on the International Space Station, but I don't know whether, I don't think there's any particular advantage to being in a lunar orbit from that point of view, from the scientific experiment point of view, than being in a low Earth orbit, but I stand to be corrected on that. But anyway, NASA and the Japanese Space Agency, JAXA, they have announced at a press conference that they're happy to go ahead from their point of view. There's other countries involved too, and I'm not sure how they've signed in blood, so to speak, yet. But NASA and Japan are happy to go ahead with that, and also to keep to do their bit to keep the International Space Station going until the year 2030.
Yeah, just before we go and mention our guest for next week, an in-studio guest, Apollo 13 seems to hold the record for the farthest away from the Earth. And it's, again, thanks to Alan for that as well. The text line has been changed just recently, so if you don't have it, it's 087-179-1032. It also works on WhatsApp as well, so you have two ways of getting in at us. And it's that's the number again, 087-179-1032. Now, what does space smell like? How they came up with this?
Well, it's a vacuum.
I have no idea.
I assume it doesn't smell of anything.
Yeah, so most of space is completely absent of anything. Not dust, not planets, nor sun, not even air. So why do many of the people who've been to space and spent time in it report that space has an actual smell? So there's a few sort of nifs that they get through their nostrils. Burning metal, they have almond cookies.
I've heard that, yes.
Yeah. And was no astronaut has been unwise enough to unclasp and remove their helmet while in the vacs of space.
I should hope not.
Yeah, burnt almond cookies. There's also an acrid smell. There's walnuts and brake pads. There's gunpowder. much like all the wine connoisseurs, of course, you have to have a wine. I just want wine to taste like wine. I don't want it to taste of chocolate and strawberries and anything else. So, and the most common one of the whole lot is that burnt smell. I'm sure they get it just as they enter the International Space Station. So,
I have heard it when some of them open, they open the hatch into the International Space Station, yeah, that what they smell is in a tank. B.O.
Yeah. It would be much the same as a long-haul flight coming back from across the seas and six and eight-hour flight. They say that it's rather unique is the way some of them would describe the smell when they open the door of the aircraft. So it would be much the same in the International Space Station. Now, next week,
we have a special guest.
We have
Stephen Kershaw coming in to us to talk about all things telescopes. Give us advice on what to buy, I suppose.
Yeah.
He has his own, he of K-Tech Telescopes. And he's given us advice of what to go, what's the difference between, presumably, refractors and reflectors and cassegrains and which ones are common and binoculars.
It's a fascinating subject, and whether you should go for binoculars before a telescope. The answer really is no. You should get a telescope if you can, but binoculars give you a super wide vision of the sky and help you around to, I suppose, learn where some of the stars and things are, and you'll get to see clusters and galaxies and all sorts of things with them as well. So what you should look forward to first. So we will have Stephen in next Tuesday.
We should ask him about his own particular interests, of course, in astronomy.
I was with him actually earlier on today, just organising a few things, and I got a couple of things that might come up as well. So it'll be good fun to hear what he has to say.
And if any of the listeners have questions on mounts and power tanks and drives and
the new thing, which is astrophotography. And there's all sorts of different mounts and things you can get for that as well. So this will be pretty interesting. It's going to take up most of the program. In fact, probably all, and about three more programs following that, I'd say, at this stage. So no doubt we'll see how popular it goes. So there we are. He's going to tell us how to buy your first telescope as well, and all of the telescope types. So anyway, that's about it, Ben.
Thank you for that, John. And thanks to James Sweeney and to Conor Lennon also. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Don't forget to tune in next week for Stephen Kershaw and all things telescopes. Send your questions. We'd love to hear from you. But up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, it's Threads with Bren Lynott. And 11 p.m., Ear to the Globe with Nigel Wood. Then at midnight until 2 a.m., we have After Hours with Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues, and soul. But please join me and John and our special guest, Stephen Kershaw, next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening and say goodnight, John.
And just before I say goodnight, John, Alan's been on again. You get a smell of burnt steak and some wet gunpowder as well. I'm sure there's lots more to read up.
You want to check his frying pan, maybe. That's where he's getting the smell of burnt steak from.
Yeah, anyway, that's it from me. I'll say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.
And see you next week. Bye bye.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.